Welcome back to Hype Podcast, Hypeable.com's flagship show, where we bring you all the latest news and entertainment and pop culture and offer some awesome analysis on the way. Thank you for joining us for episode 144. My name is Pamela. I will be hosting today, but I also have Selena and Marima with me. Got a full show. It's going to be a good time. How you guys doing?
Doing awesome.
I'm good. A little tired, but good.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get through it. Maybe pop culture will be enough to wake you up.
I hope so.
All right. Before we get started, we do want to remind you about all of our amazing contact information, because we love when you guys get involved and write in and let us know what you're thinking about the things that we're discussing, or, you know, about things that we should be discussing that maybe are not on our radar yet. For starters, you can always reach us via Twitter. We are at Hypeable Hype on there. We are also at Hypeable Hype on Instagram. Probably not the best place to leave comments, but you can always follow along on all of our pop culture related adventures if you follow us on there. You can also leave rather lengthy comments in the show notes on Hypeable.com in the latest show notes page. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that too. Our email address is hype@hypeable.com. And of course, we launched a Patreon earlier this year. So if you want to join us on there and see what we're getting up to, you can find us at patreon.com/hypepodcast. And we have got a really fun discussion planned for that. This episode, our bonus discussion, is going to be talking about Netflix's Dear White People. So if you are on Patreon with us, stay tuned and we'll have that up for you later this week. We are going to kick things off, as always, with How We Hype, where we tell you guys everything about what we've been doing and digging and stuff like that in pop culture. Maybe some things that, you know, we haven't been digging so much. So let us start. Let's see. What does everybody have? Let's start with Selena. I feel like yours is pretty timely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So last week, Marima had watched Guardians of the Galaxy, the sequel, and this time I have watched the sequel. I went to see it with my little 8-year-old cousin who doesn't speak English, and we had a heated debate afterwards because he was sure that something had happened that had not happened, and he didn't believe me when I tried to explain to him that he had misunderstood. So that was fun. The movie itself, I was a big fan of the first one, and I was kind of let down by the second, to be honest. I know it's been getting mixed reviews, and I think I was definitely in the lower end of it. I think what I loved about the first one was that it managed to sort of strike a nice chord between being like genuinely engaging and finding some kind of like satirical, we don't take ourselves too seriously kind of riff on the superhero genre. And I think in the second one, it took itself too seriously, but still tried to make the same jokes. But those jokes came off as genuine, which made it just extremely cheesy for me. There was a moment with a ball that made me laugh before it even happened in the quiet cinema. I was just like, oh my god. I'm also not a huge fan of Baby Groot. I did think it was the high point of this movie, but that was probably because I wasn't loving the rest of it. What I did love, though, was Karen Gillan's character. I always forget her name.
Nebula?
Nebula, that's right. I loved her in this movie. She was amazing. I didn't feel like she had a lot to do, but I just wanted more of her. She was the best, and she could have her own movie, and I would watch it all day. I did the entire last bit of it, where it was like this character from the first movie came in and had this huge emotional melodramatic role to play, and they spent like the last like quarter of the movie dealing with it. I found to be a very strange choice. All in all, it seemed like a very strange choice for a story to tell. Basically, this like space Jesus, like film origin story movie. I would have liked. I thought they could have done better than they did, but I did think the performances were very good, and I did like the music a lot, obviously, and it was a fine movie. And I've already forgotten half of the things that happened, and my 8-year-old cousin was very entertained. So, in that sense, it worked fine.
Interesting. Well, it's still...
And the 5 bonus scenes were so pointless. Like, there was one of them that was like, oh, I'm glad I stayed for that. But the other 4 were like, oh, my God, too much. I'm sorry.
Well, it's still still not out here for us in the United States, which is kind of weird. Usually we get things early, so no room to complain. But I'll let you guys know what I think next show. I'm very intrigued now after hearing both of your reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marima, what have you been doing?
Well, I have a book recommendation. First of all, I read Uprooted by Naomi Novik. This came out in 2015, so it's a little later. And I think it was a bit of a fandom sort of hit, but I wanted to recommend it because I read it over the weekend and it's a really solid single standalone fantasy book, which I feel like we don't get a lot. It's YA. It's about a girl who, how to do this without spoilers. There's like a dragon who kidnaps a girl every year as sort of a tribute through this part of a sort of arrangement with this town. And I don't think it's a spoiler because it happens in like the first, you know, four pages to say like the lead character is the new girl who is taken by the dragon. And then it sort of spirals from there, but it starts out like you kind of think you know where it's going, and it plays with a lot of fandom fantasy tropes, which I thought was super fun. So it kind of spirals in a totally different direction. It's actually quite dark in a lot of places, but it's really well done. I thought it's really fun. Apparently the author is like a very big fan fiction author as well. So like, that's not my jam, but if that's what you're into, you might be into that. I think like fan fiction writers often have a really good grasp on tropes and like a really good understanding of sort of how to subvert them. So I think that definitely comes across in the book. So Uprooted, it's very fun. It has a super fun cover. Would recommend. It's like a nice, fun, easy read with, you know, a little more going on. And then also just for fun, I went and saw this week, you know, they do those movie screenings where you go and like they take out the music and a symphony orchestra plays the score. I don't know if you guys have seen one of those. I've seen a bunch. And this week I went and saw them do Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, which was very beautiful. John Williams's score is, you know, amazing. And so hearing it live was great. Although, like, this is, I don't know, the fourth or fifth ones of these that I've seen. The last one I saw was Indiana Jones, the first Indiana Jones. And like, that's great because again, that score is just so fantastic to hear live. So basically, if you haven't been to one of these before, they play the movie on a big screen and then they play all the sound effects, like they're on a separate track. So all of the dialogue and everything is in it, but all of the music is removed. And so the orchestra sits in front and there's a conductor. And so you can like see the orchestra and you can see the movie being projected behind them. So you kind of get the double experience. And I saw Indiana Jones and like when you see them, they kind of encourage the audience to get involved. So you're not just sitting there silently like you might at a normal classical music or classical music performance. So they want you to like kind of cheer and laugh and, you know, like just engage with the movie as you normally would. But there was something weirdly performative about the Harry Potter one that did not happen at the others that I have been to, where people like, it was a little too much. Like, people were kind of wolf whistling like 11-year-old Emma Watson and 10-year-old Ginny. And like, I don't know, there was just something kind of off about it. People were a little too keen to be like, my house got mentioned, like I have to loudly cheer and like proclaim this. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice. Like, we all did that at the start, but now, you know, I do actually want to hear the music, guys. So it was an interesting thing, but it was, you know, it was fun. And as always now, when you go to any like Harry Potter thing, so interesting to see the demographics because it's just such a huge age range. So that was fun. If they do anything like that in your area, I would highly, highly recommend. I knew they do a bunch around Australia, so like I assume it must be a pretty common thing.
I've never been to one like that, but I know the Hollywood Bowl out in LA does them during the summer.
Oh, you should go, Pam.
I want to. There's actually a theater out here called the Alamo Draft House, and they do sing-alongs and stuff. So we've gone to a couple of those, but it's a little different. There's like no live music. They just will play the music.
Oh, that's fun, though.
Like, yeah, so we've done like the Spice Girls, Spice World one, and that's like really fun, and it's always themed, and they give you like little like themed treats around stuff like that. But that's cute. I'm gonna have to put that on my list.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a movie score buff, so like I'm particularly into it. But you have to kind of choose your movie carefully. They're usually pretty good, but the best ones that I have ever seen are The Lord of the Rings, just FYI, because they have like those scores have a choral component as well, and so they have the singers also, and it's just really effective to hear those films performed live. So would recommend if they're doing that. But I mean, basically go see anything. It's just super fun.
That's so cool. Well, I have, I also went to the movies. I went to see that movie, The Circle. You guys know which one this is, right? With like Tom Hanks and
Emma Watson. The new Emma Watson.
Karen Gillan. Yeah. And John Boyega, like basically went for the cast. That's basically the only reason you should go. The movie was okay. The topic is very relatable for those of you that like don't know what this movie's about. Basically, Emma Watson gets hired at this like very tech forward company that's like a mix of Apple meets Facebook meets like every social media like aspect known to man, and she kind of gets like, you know, she joins this community basically, because a lot of these tech companies, like, they are kind of like a little conglomerate community within Silicon Valley and things like that. And she thinks that like this company is great, and then as the movie progresses, it kind of deals with the idea of like how far is too far for technology, and like how much do we give up in terms of like our basic rights of freedom and privacy and things like that. So the idea of the movie was really interesting. I think that it fell flat for me in a few moments, and I also like left with like a lot of questions that I felt should have been answered, which was kind of weird. But I have heard that the book is better. It's actually based on a book with the same title. So yeah, I'm still not really sure how I feel about it. I don't think you need to like run out and see this, but if you know you're interested, you could totally rent it and, you know, make up your minds for yourselves. But yeah, definitely went basically for the cast.
How was Emma Watson's emoting through eyebrows?
Oh, but everything I have ever hoped for. That's something that's a constant. You can't. Yeah, but actually Karen Gillan did a really good job. And like the person I went with is like, you know, like not like too familiar with Karen Gillan, because, you know, like we know her from Doctor Who and things like that. But like everything else that she's been in, like she, you know, she's either kind of like unrecognizable or it's like too small. It's not like getting like mainstream attention. So they walked away fairly impressed with her acting. And I was like, oh yeah, you should like watch Doctor Who, but only like the last season. And so it's like pretty funny to realize that she's still kind of like making a name for herself and things like that. But yeah, like the acting was pretty good. It's just like the story fell a little bit flat. All right, well, that does it for Howie Hype this week. We're going to move straight into the news. I apologize in advance because it's straight up Harry Hype one more time. You guys,
I mean,
I'm not even sorry about what this show is turning into anymore. I'm here for it. So we are recording on a very blessed day because Harry Styles decided to grace us with another song off of his self-titled solo debut album, which comes out in 10 days. The song is called Sweet Creature, and he actually co-wrote it with Thomas Hall, who is better known by his stage name, Kid Harpoon. And he actually has had a hand in crafting a bunch of Florence and the Machine songs, including Shake It Out and Leave My Body. So he's definitely no stranger to kind of like that more folksy vibe, which is definitely what you get when you listen to the song. It is a ballad. It's a love song, and it is definitely giving fans all the feels. So I'm a big fan of this track, but I want to know what you guys think, because your homework before we started recording was to listen to this so we could discuss.
I love it. I thought it's such an interesting song. Like, obviously you know this better than me, but I thought it had has an interesting composition that isn't like a typical pop song, you know, like it sort of stays on the same level through most of the song, and I really enjoy that. It also has such a very Blackbird vibe to it. I think a lot of the same sort of notes and the same opening music, the beginning of it is very similar, and I really enjoy that slower song. I love everything he's putting out now. Like, literally, this is just amazing.
I know. Me, every time Harry releases a single, you guys, this is the best song of all time. That's just, like, literally what happens. It's so bad. But it is so impressive. And you're right. I definitely get those vibes as well. That, mm-hmm. like, maybe a little bit of, like, Bob Dylan, too. But But yeah, it's like, it's this album shaping up to be really good, which is good because I'm about to drop some cash on these concert tickets that are coming out on Friday. So I just...
Oh my God, guys, tragedy.
What?
I am not going to be in the country for his Australian stops.
No.
I'm not going to be in Australia when he comes here. And then I miss him when he's in the States because, like, that's too early. But I'm going to be in America when he's in Australia. And, like, his concert that he's doing in Sydney is, like, around the corner from me. I'm devastated.
Oh, my gosh. That's the worst.
I don't know what to do about this. Yeah. Also, he is playing such weird venues. Like, the venue that he is playing in Sydney is a very small venue.
How many?
Like,
how much
venues he's doing here.
How much is the maximum capacity? I'm curious because I've looked it up for San Francisco, but...
Let me look it up real quick.
Okay, because for San Francisco, it's 3,100 at the Masonic.
This is 1,600 at the Enmore
That's
Theater.
That's really small.
Right, it's going to sell out in like 2 seconds, but right. So yeah. Good luck anyone like actually trying to get tickets.
And he promised on Twitter that he was always available.
Yeah. Oh yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah, this tweet that came with this story was like, it basically is going to give you all the feels. He says, Sweet Creature is out now, album's out in 10 days, I am available always. I'm like, stop it, Harry. Stop it. It's too much.
Yeah. I have to say, like, I've only listened to the song once. It's not my favorite of the three. It's probably my least favorite, mm-hmm. but I need to give another listen because I think it's the kind of song that will grow on me. But mostly I'm just interested in it, like, as trying to work out the album as a whole. I think that's going to be really interesting to see. We're starting to get like a better picture, I think, of like what the album is actually going to be based on the three singles that we have heard so far. So that would be fun. I don't know. It's not that I don't like it. I think that's like quite a bold choice for him because he kind of can't really hide the vocals on this. So it's like quite brave, but I don't know if I love the song as much as I really like the other two so far, but I'm going to give it a few more listens before anyone sends me Harry hate mail. Guys, I'm ready to love it. I'm in a position to love it. Like, I want to love it. I also listened to it at 6:30 this morning. So, like, who knows? That may have colored it slightly.
Yeah. You know what? That's a really good point you bring up, though, because everything else is has got that big band sound. But this is, like, not acoustic, but very much, like, soft guitar driven. So
yeah. It is. The arrangement is really interesting, too. I mean, I'm curious just to see, like, how the tracks are laid out and Same. The balance of the album, because I feel like that's the kind of thing that he seems to be, like, quite aware of, you know, and, like, invested mm-hmm. in. So, anyway, sorry, just derailing the conversation.
No, that's a really good point. And, yeah, I mean, maybe we should wrap up Harry hype. But, you know, tune in next week for Niall hype, you guys, because Niall Horan, a.k.a. Selena's favorite One Direction member, is also... releasing a new single this Friday.
Oh my God.
What's
I didn't know that. That's great news.
Yeah.
What's his like post One Direction sound like, Pam? I haven't heard any of his stuff.
It's very This Town, also very acoustic driven, actually. I would say like less folksy Mumford, but not a big leap from like mm-hmm. One Direction's 4 album, like the last one.
Okay, so more like
Ed Sheeran, sorry, Made in the AM. Yeah, exactly. Like right. Yeah, like less okay. folksy Mumford,
yeah, but
like more mainstream Ed, but old school, like, you know, soft Ed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can picture it. I mean, I
okay.
can hear
not
it,
like sing Ed, but like
no, I
know.
Get it.
Yeah,
like A Team Ed.
I knew you would. Yes, like A Team Ed. Exactly, yes. Like A Team Ed. Perfect.
See, guys, I can translate Pam. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah. Like, let's wrap this up. We will be back talking about Niall. Is that his name? Yes. We actually met Niall next time. And look, I just assume when the actual Harry album comes out, we'll be doing like a whole special reviewing it. So, or something. We'll work something out. But moving on now to you know, maybe something a little less exciting, I don't know, whatever, depends. You know what? I have to pause for a second. This is another thing that really annoyed me. When we were watching Harry Potter, every time Snape was on screen, everyone kept cheering. And I was like, turn the lights on, shame those people, kick them out. Like, get out. That's no, you have terrible taste. Anyway, so J.K. Rowling this week said she's sorry about Snape dying. So that happened. As she announces on the Hogwarts, Battle of Hogwarts anniversary. So the first year we had Fred, and then last year we had Lupin. This year she has said, okay, here it is. Please don't start flame wars over it. But this year I'd like to apologize for killing Whispers. Snape runs for cover. And to that I say, Joe, you don't know me, and I'll start flame wars if I want to. And she didn't give any other, like, you know, background or whatever, but she's just putting it out there. And, yeah, discuss. Does anyone care about this? Do we wish she would stop doing this? Is it nice? How do we feel about it?
It's, Snape is such a polarizing character, though, you know? And I understand why people have, like, strong feelings with regards to Snape, one way or the other. It's a very bold, ballsy move. I don't mind that she does it, but I definitely think that she was shooting for a shock factor with Snape, honestly.
Yeah, because there are a lot of other characters to pick.
Yeah, like Tonks. Like,
yeah, like Colin Creevy.
Colin Creevy, yeah, or maybe like Lavender R.I.P. Brown. She might.
I thought she already apologized for Tonks and Lupin.
No, she only apologized for Remus. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's also, like, it's fine. It's a fun tradition. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, poke holes in it. But I do think, like, apologizing for killing your fictional characters is, like nobody's... I mean, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but nobody's really, like, how dare you kill Snape? Like, he had to die, whether you like him or not. Like, it's not that, like, how could you? You know, it's not like killing Lupin, you know, which is cruel.
You know what? I kind of take it back. I think I agree. Like, I kind of wish he hadn't died, because now he's gone on to be like patron saint, like Snape the martyr, patron saint of the friend zone. You know, like if he was alive and just suffering, that would be fine with me. Like, I just hate Snape. He's just the worst character. I mean, he's a fascinating character, but he's like the most garbage human being, and like, I will die on this hill. I will never retreat from this position. So it's just like, someone just says the word Snape and J.K. Rowling in the same sentence, and I like get an eye twitch and start like yelling things. I think that's what's happened in this in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, like, it is kind of too bad that, like, in order for Snape to even be like redeemable at all, he had to die. Like, I don't know how strong that makes
he's not redeemable
character, right? But like, that's what she was aiming for. She was like, I'm going to let them see what I have always known, but the only way for us to see that was for him to die. It's very like, but you can't even compare them. It's very like Merlin finale, you know, with Arthur being like, everything I know, like, I know now everything. It's like, okay, but like, you could have had a whole season, or you could have had a few more episodes dedicated to this, and it would be fine. Similarly, if Snape had lived, like, would we still feel this way about him? You know, it's like, I don't know. I go back and forth.
Yeah, because it's so hashtag romantic. Oh my God. Ugh. Sorry, I'm bitter.
Love. That's the title of this episode.
It's not. It's, oh, I can't even talk about this. Yeah, it'll just make me crazy.
Okay, so let's move on to something completely different. I was trying to think of some kind of, like, Snape, Hermione, Emma Watson, Beauty and the Beast, Lumiere, Ewan McGregor. I did it. 7-ish degrees of separation. So Ewan McGregor has joined Disney's Christopher Robin biopic. I also could have just said one British children's classic to another. Oh, well, whatever. Lost opportunities. Well, he's not actually committed to the role yet, but he's circling the project, which, according to The Hollywood Reporter, means that it's very likely that he's going to end up starring in the film. The film is kind of like similar to, I guess, Finding Neverland, which had Johnny Depp as an adult J.M. Barrie, I think. So he's going to be playing an adult Christopher Robin from the Winnie the Pooh stories, and it's going to be, he's lost his sense of imagination, and he's now focused on being a successful businessman. Like, what's interesting about this Christopher Robin movie that has me sort of a little bit intrigued, even more now because Ewan McGregor is starring in it and I like him, is that obviously this was like a real person. You know, like the fictional version of Christopher Robin who was running around in the woods. The Neverwoods?
The Hundred Acre Woods. Called? The Hundred Acre Woods.
Oh, I didn't. I never knew that.
I'm a big Winnie the Pooh fan. Did you guys know this?
Yeah. I am too, in Danish.
Oh, what is it in Danish?
It's Hundrede Meter Skoven, which actually means what you just said, the Hundred Meter Woods. So I could have probably figured that out. Whatever, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, but yeah, what my point is that he's... It could either be like a biopic kind of the real person, or it could be sort of a fictionalized account of him rediscovering his imagination and Winnie the Pooh and friends coming to life when he's an adult, like Smurf style. I don't know.
It reminds me a lot of Hook.
It's an interesting concept. Yes. Oh, yeah. That's a good point, actually. Mm. Him finding his imagination again.
This is also decidedly less creepy than what Disney originally billed this as, which was live-action Winnie the Pooh. Which was, like, incredibly terrifying as an idea.
Is this the same one, or is it two different ones? Because I was under the impression there was a Christopher Robin biopic and a Winnie the Pooh live-action movie.
Oh, that I'm not sure about.
It could have been the same one.
The same thing. But I wouldn't be surprised if there were two different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's hard to keep track.
It is really hard to keep track with Disney's manifesto as of late.
Okay, well, keeping on children's classics, there's exciting news for, I don't know, 5 or 6 people who are still invested in this series. There's a new director, or like a director, for the 4th Narnia movie, which apparently they're still making. And it is Joe Johnston, who wrote this article. Selena, who directed the best Marvel movie? No.
who directed the best Marvel movie?
The second best. The second best Marvel movie after Winter Soldier, Captain America, The First Avenger. And he also directed the original Jumanji and a bunch of other things. One of the Jurassic Parks and anyway. So yeah, so this is for Chronicles of Narnia, The Silver Chair. The last one was out in 2010. This one apparently is getting underway now if there's a director attached. And I mean, I actually really like that. I'm glad you gave me this story because I genuinely really like the Narnia series. And I was a huge, huge fan of the books when I was growing up. So this is kind of fun. And following what happens in the books, this film jumps away from the original 4 Pevensey kids to their cousin and his friend, which is kind of what happens in the books as you progress. It's sort of, you jump through different groups of characters. So, yeah, we'll be seeing that, I guess. Is anyone going to watch this? Are you guys Narnia fans?
Yeah, I love Narnia. I think those movies, I feel like we've talked about this before, like these are the most successful of the like young it's tough to call Narnia young adult, but you know what I mean. Like that genre of movie, I feel like they capture a magic that the Harry Potter movies never captured. And I really, really enjoy them. I think they're wonderful. And I think it's nice that they are finding a way to continue them and to continue to adapt the book series. I'm here for it. I think it's great. And as I, you know, the best Marvel movie of all time, Hyperbole.com says so it must be true. The Captain America movie. I really like that one, and I think I have faith in this director. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be interesting if they recast though, because obviously Eustace is now an adult, or the actor who played him.
I mean, they could just.
He looks eternally young though. So
yeah, I'm looking him up right now. What does he look like these days? Oh no, he's fine. No, it'll be the same person. Yeah, they're not going to recast. He was also in Maze Runner. Yeah, Will Poulter, and I don't know. It'll be interesting, I guess, to see if they. So, this is The Silver Chair is the 6th book in the Narnia series, and they've kind of skipped out the ones that they could skip. And it will be interesting to see if they do The Last Battle, which is the 7th and final book, which takes the series in an interesting way. So I feel like I don't want to spoil it, even though it came out like 70 years ago. but yeah, I think I don't know if this is like the best adaptation of something, but they're definitely really good adaptations, I think. they're really solid. And they've been pretty consistent over the, I know kind of interest dropped off after the first couple, but I think like they have been genuinely like pretty, pretty solid over the three. So it'll be interesting to see. It's like nice that, that our fans are actually going to get this film.
Yeah. So we're moving on to something that is decidedly less nice. We actually have a couple of really annoying, frustrating, sad stories that we have to talk about this week. And the first is the news that broke a couple of days ago that after a long sort of period of uncertainty, MTV has chosen to cancel Sweet Vicious, which had its first season air over this past year. It's a very, very important show. I was looking forward to watching it. I hadn't watched it myself. It's one of those that you've heard so many good things about that you kind of want to make sure you're in the right mindset to see it. I don't know if either of you guys have seen it. If you have, feel free to jump in to have an actual description of it. But basically, it was about campus rape culture. Is that right? Like, it was a couple of really empowered women who just gave viewers a sense of empowerment in a way.
Well, they're like vigilantes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I haven't watched it. I've been, again, like, waiting to watch it. Is it on Netflix, the first season now? Someone tell me where I can watch this in Australia, because I really want to check it out, especially now. But yeah, it's like two girls and they're kind of vigilantes and sort of dealing with rape culture and et cetera on a college campus, right? That's kind of that's the basic premise. Exactly. And then something more things happen, I assume. They have great hairstyles. I know that from the promos.
They do. Yeah. But I mean, we have a bunch of people on Hypebeast who watched it and who loved it. And then people on Twitter have just been really upset about it because it is one of those stories that feel really important. And MTV is just, it's just an example of network television just not being able to read the climate and not realizing, I mean, obviously this is total bias based on the people that I know who like it, but just not realizing when they have a really good special thing and choosing to let it go because of ratings. And if this had been on Netflix from the get-go, there almost certainly would have been a second season and it would have been able to build a following because the people that have actually watched it genuinely love it. Like, it might have a small viewership, but the viewers they do have are so passionate about it that it needed more promotion. It didn't need to get canceled. So that's very, very unfortunate. I'm sorry to all the fans, and I'm still going to watch it, and we can talk about it at some point because it's supposed to be really, really good. And I know that Tucker, our listener Tucker, is devastated, so shout out to him especially because he was on my Twitter being sad.
Yeah, and it's like a super important show too, right? Like, I don't want to dismiss this as being like, oh yeah, like deals with campus rape culture anyway. Like, that's really, I mean, again, like having not seen it, there's only so much you can say, but it seems like it deals with the subjects really sensitively and really effectively. And part of why people are so upset about it being canceled is because of like this particular subject matter and the fact that these are really important issues to raise and really important stories to tell. And there was a really beautiful tribute to the show that was written by the showrunner that she posted on Twitter when the news came out. So I'm sure people have seen that, but I think they said in that, you know, they were going to try and get it picked up somewhere else. So now people are asking Netflix, as always, to step in and save their show.
Mm-hmm. Well, from one cancellation to another, I've never seen Sweet Vicious, but I'm still curious about it. But something I was incredibly invested in, as I know a lot of our listeners were, was in Fox's Pitch, which debuted this last fall and followed the rise of the first major league female pitcher, Ginny Baker, who was played by Kylie Bunbury. And the show was just like so good and really kind of tackled the idea of what it would be like if a woman did make it into the majors head on, and it was just going in such a great direction, but unfortunately just did not find its audience, and Fox clearly didn't feel the need to gamble on a second season, which is just too bad. And I think that that's the worst thing about shows that get canceled after one season is sometimes like they need time to find their footing, and with another season it's possible they could build an audience and stuff like that. But despite the fan connection with, you know, a story about just a really strong woman that was definitely playing a man's game, I did not live to see another season, and I am very, very sad about this. It's just awful.
I know. This is really sad. Like, obviously, not to dismiss or to undermine the other one, but Pitch, I loved Pitch. And, like, I feel like we kind of knew that it was going to get canceled. Like, I had sort of mentally prepared myself because we hadn't heard anything from so long, and it hadn't been getting the best ratings, and it hadn't been getting it had been getting buzz, but definitely not as much as it could have gone. And this just goes to show, like, Ginny Baker was called up to the big leagues. She lasted a season and then she was thrown out again because it wasn't her time. And I'm just very, very frustrated. Like, the symbolic aspect of Pitch getting canceled just really makes me sad as much as the actual show getting canceled, because I loved it and I love Ginny Baker. She was so fantastic.
All right, well, keeping on TV news for a second here, another I don't know if I'm into this or not. No, you know what? I know I'm not into this. I'm not into anything today. But from Harry Potter and the Cursed Child author Jack Thorne, we are getting a new musical TV project, and our La La Land director Damien Chazelle apparently is going to direct it. So this is called The Eddie. We don't know which network it's going to be on, but it is a musical drama set in contemporary Paris. It revolves around a club, its owner, the house band, and the volatile city that surrounds them. So it's Whiplash plus La La Land, basically. And I guess if you like them, I mean, I liked La La Land. I really hated Whiplash, so I guess that's why I'm torn on this. And obviously I hate The Cursed Child. So, you know, that's two for three, unfortunately. But people really, really like Damien Chazelle's take on sort of musicians in particular. So I can see why they would be excited about this. And it's a very sort of atmospheric logline, even just to hear what it's going to be about. I mean, hopefully there are, I don't know, some women in this group that's described here.
That's crazy.
I know, women playing music. That's insane. And I don't know, some people who aren't white, but I guess we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, this is all very much early stages. But, you know, I do like this trend towards more musicals. So if it means that Damien Chazelle has to direct literally all of them, I guess I'll take it, because hopefully then it means, you know, some other people will also get the chance to do this.
Mm-hmm. What I like about this is I love how it's like a club, a music club in Paris. And I'm like, is this secretly a La La Land prequel with the aunt? Like, is this the aunt she knew in Paris? Like, connection. Clearly, Damien Chazelle just likes Paris. But it could be fun to imagine.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So they're saying it's a TV musical project, but, like, we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. So it'll be interesting to see if what is that guy's name who does all the score for Damien Chazelle? Justin something. Anyway, I'll have to look it up. Justin Hurwitz, who they kind of work together. He does all of the music for Whiplash and La La Land. I guess it'll be interesting to see if he jumps on this too, because they seem to be a bit of a package deal.
Yeah. So we have a little bit of 13 Reasons Why news. The series has, of course, been in the headlines a lot, despite the fact that it's been out for quite a while. I don't think that there's been a Netflix show that's really had this kind of, like, lasting, buzzworthy effect for a while. And it's understandable why people are still talking about this, because it deals with a very intense subject matter. And, you know, anytime suicide is involved and things like that, there are a lot of different arguments as to why this is good or why this is bad. So in response to a lot of the backlash the show has been getting from teachers and psychologists and advocates for mental health and things like that, Netflix has released a statement that they issued to BuzzFeed explaining that they're definitely still standing behind the idea that, you know, a lot of people have looked to the series as a way to kind of spark a conversation that should be being had in general across a wide variety of generations. But more importantly, they said that they are working towards making sure people know exactly what they're getting into when they start the show, if they choose to start the show, by adding additional viewer warning cards before the first episode. And I think that this is really smart because we've talked a lot about, you know, the things that we liked about this show and why it is an important series and why it is important that it's out there, because it is sparking conversation, regardless of whether or not you feel like very strongly against the show or very strongly for something like this. But one of the things that did bother me really was that there was no warning card until way too far into the show. So I think that this is a good first step. As far as making sure that, you know, people that could be drastically affected by the events of Hannah Baker's story do not fall into, you know, the downward spiral that could lead to something incredibly tragic. So that was good to know that they're taking those precautions. And then just very quickly, there are reports circling that they are already working on a season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. According to The Hollywood Reporter, they reported that a writer's room for a sophomore run has been up and running for a few weeks. So there's still no word from Netflix as to whether or not we're actually going to get a second season, but it looks like they've definitely got all the building blocks in place in case they do get greenlit for a second season. So it should be interesting to see what comes of this.
I think that I still believe that it is very important that this show exists and that it is allowed to exist, and that we don't begin to police like whether content is allowed to exist or not, just in case people see it. But that said, because I do think it sparks important conversations, and I do think when it was first kind of pitched to me, it was about misogyny and rape culture again. Like, that was what the show was about when I started watching it, and obviously framed by Hannah Baker's suicide, but it was about so many more things. It's about the culture around what, how people and teenagers especially treat each other. And I think that is such a mirror to a lot of stuff that happens in real life. And I think that's so important. At the same time, I absolutely think that there should be warnings at the start, especially at the start of the first episode, because when you start watching it again, you don't know how deep it's going to go. And the deeper you get into the show, the deeper it grips you. And if you're already like at risk and you start watching it and you get into it and then the trigger warnings come, like, I feel like once the story has started, you need to watch it through to feel like catharsis. So you need to know before you begin watching it what it's actually going to be about and what like content you can expect to see, because you need to sort of make like, don't consume content that you are not ready or prepared for or that you shouldn't consume. So absolutely, I think that it's totally fair and good that they're adding these. But I also think it's good that Netflix is standing behind it in a way. Like, even though I'm not totally sure I would like a second season, I guess the fact that they're doing it kind of confirms that they're kind of committing to the show being about the culture around Hannah's suicide. Like other than her being specifically about her and her reasons, it's also about the people that are dealing with it all now, you know, that are hurting and that are facing, some of them facing repercussions and stuff like that. So in that sense, I'm sort of glad to see it carrying on, because I'm interested to see what kind of stories they tell with that. But I totally get if people don't want a second season as well.
I just want to say, I also think it's totally fine. Like, I've made a decision not to watch this show, and that's fine too for people.
No, that's not fine.
Because...
Yeah, obviously that's fine.
Yeah, I think there's kind of something that goes unsaid with these kinds of things, which is like, when something reaches sort of a peak fandom moment, which is what this was, that there's this kind of thing, it's like, well, you have to watch it to then make a decision. And it's like, you don't. I mean, that's what critics exist for. So like, you know, I sort of watched the 13 Reasons Why train get to the station and sort of hang out there for a while and now sort of, you know, go off to the next place. And I was thinking about watching it like at the start and I read some of the pushback about it, and the more I thought about it, the more I was like, no, this seems like super exploitative to me, and I really don't like what I'm hearing about it. And, you know, if you read, like, there is so much written about it now, like, you can read a huge range of things without actually being spoiled on, like, everything that happens. That's fine too. Like, people don't have to, and it doesn't have to be because of, you know, the particular, like, content warnings in this or whatever. Like, you don't need to be an at-risk person. Like, you can just be like, this is not for me. It's okay. Just because something is a big, like, fandom moment, it can be really hard to kind of be like, no, I'm just going to step back from this. But, like, that's okay. I just feel like that's worth noting also.
It is. It's a good point too, because I think that one of the things that was with this 13 Reasons Why, it became a cult thing. Like, people just gripped, and it was like Stan Twitter that got a hold of it. Like, just making gif sets and making memes and being like, Clay, what's his face, deserves better and too precious for this world. And it was like, it was gripped by a particular part of the fandom that hyped it up to be this teen phenomenon, which I guess it is. But but it was just, I feel like it got, like, not through official advertising, but just through, and also because of the cast. Like, the cast is really close and is posting all this Instagram stuff, and it really developed a fandom that maybe didn't match up to what the actual subject matter of the show is. So, and you can't control that when that happens. So that was just kind of a thing that I think that's really important what you said, that just because it's a big fandom moment, like, that's why I watched it, because everyone else was watching it. Like, you need to be able to step back from it, but you also should expect, but we should demand that our media is aware enough to make sure that it is made clear from the get-go what people are signing up for. Not that, when I say that's not actually what I mean, but when it comes to stuff like this, I think it's reasonable to demand that.
Yeah, and honestly, like, that was my big problem with it, because I literally just forgot what it was about, and I hit play because I think I talked about this before. This was filmed in and around my hometown, so I just kind of started watching for the intrigue factor, and then I realized what it was about, and I was like, oh yeah, that's right, this is the thing,
this is that one.
And I feel like it's not fair to bamboozle an audience that way, so I was disappointed about that. But I definitely think that you guys both bring up good points. It's okay to watch it. It's okay not to watch it. I think the important thing is that as polarizing as this show has become, it is, like, important conversations are being had. And at the end of the day, I think that that's incredibly important. So.
Yeah. Yeah, like this one and Big Little Lies. I kept getting those mixed up. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure which one I was watching.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on, we have some good news to almost end the news segment with. This morning, at the time of recording, we had been worried about the future of our favorite television shows and our movies in, I guess, a couple of years this would have been in effect. But because of the ongoing negotiations with the Writers Guild of America, East and West, trying to negotiate better deals for their union writers and standing right on the precipice of what would have been a major writers' strike similar to the one that we had in 2008, which had huge repercussions on American television. But this morning we learned that at the very last minute, in extended playtime, if you will, they reached an agreement, which means that there will not be a strike, which means that all of your TV shows will carry on as usual, and the writers that we love and support will be able to go to work as usual and earn their living, and they will even have a little bit of a better deal than they had before. So this is really, really good news. And it was very close there for a second. And I was I was beginning to shake a little bit in my proverbial boots. But obviously, at the end of the day, this was about the riders and getting a fair deal like we talked about last week. And I'm just relieved that they get to carry on doing their thing and that they don't have to picket and not have any money.
Yeah, no one wants to strike. This is good news. Okay, one final tragedy to end the show on this week. They are changing my favorite, my only ride that I like at Disney. I'll be honest, the Jungle Cruise is very sacred. And apparently, although I love him in most other instances, in this instance, he is my mortal enemy. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, as we know, is going to be starring in the Jungle Cruise movie that we're getting, because that's the thing that we need. And he's just announced, I think over Instagram, that he's redesigning the Jungle Cruise ride. So, you know, they're going to redo it to kind of tie in with the movie, I guess. But the Jungle Cruise is the best ride. It's so sacred. I'm so sad about this. It's the only ride I like. Pam can co-sign this. When we go to Disney, this is all I want to do, is just go on the Jungle Cruise. It's so ridiculous. The jokes are so terrible. I love it so much. I do not want to see it like turned into some like action, I don't know, whatever thing with The Rock like popping in and telling jokes. So what, that's a one more tragedy for us this week.
I just want to point out that this is actually also kind of a big deal, because it's one of the original Disneyland attractions. So when the park first opened, the Jungle Cruise is one of the first, was one of the first attractions that was open to the public. And it's one of the only original ones that are still left over. So like some of the other original rides include the Casey Jr. Circus Train over by Dumbo, Snow White's Scary Adventure, and a lot of like the Fantasyland ones. Peter Pan's Flight, although that just got a bit of a facelift. I made Merrima go on this for my birthday. Sorry.
That is Pan's fave.
It is my fave. And Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And of course, like the carousel. So it's kind of a big deal anytime they decide to kind of revamp some of these and completely drastically change them, especially if you're like a Disneyland purist. Not that I am, but it is kind of like wistful to think that, like, you know, some of Walt's impact is still there unchanged. And like Merrima said, the Jungle Cruise is something that you need to enjoy for its hokiness. So it is kind of like, it's weird to think that it could be getting a very serious facelift.
Yeah. I am not a Disney purist at all. In fact, I basically do not like Disney, but I just think you can't beat perfection. And like the Jungle Cruise is already the best that it can be. Maybe, you know what they need to do? They need to have like two separate ones, and they can have like Jungle Cruise Classic and then like Jungle Cruise Adventure with The Rock or whatever.
Perfect,
and
you can like go on
which one you want. And the Rock one will like be a water roller coaster, and the Classic one will just be the same terrible jokes about like getting eaten by lions.
Amazing cosign. I would ride both of those. Perfect.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I will say, like, if they are updating the Jungle Cruise, it's a bit racist at the moment. So, like, they could probably fix that. That would be a good thing to fix.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. They have the headhunters.
Quite racist.
And things like that. Yeah.
But yeah.
A sign of that, its
but keep
time.
The jokes.
Yeah, keep the jokes.
Mm, exactly.
Not that it's right, but yeah, it's kind of one of those things that you're just like, oh, yes, this is a thing. All right. Well, that does it for the news this week. I'm glad that we capped things off on something that Merrima is upset about, but also dearly loves. We're going to head in now to TV show of the week. I think Merrima is the only one that has something, but surprise, surprise, I've actually seen this too. So I'm curious to hear what you think. Let us know.
Oh, really?
Watching. Yeah.
Well, I tried to watch Girl Boss, and I mean tried, because I stopped watching almost immediately because it's terrible. This is a new Netflix show. It's based on the book by Sofia Amoruso, who was the entrepreneur behind Nasty Gal, I believe. She has her own issues, but this is basically a show about her, and it's just terrible. Like, it's just really, really bad. And I couldn't even get through. I couldn't get through the first. I was like, okay, I'll watch one episode with like gritted teeth. I got through the first episode and I was like, that's it. I'm not watching any more of this. This is so ridiculous. It's basically just perpetuates these really terrible ideas about like entrepreneurs that you know, you have to be like basically a garbage human being, and that's acceptable if you're successful. And also, it's just like, it's trying to be the kind of millennial hero type person, but it's really, she's just so obnoxious. And like, not in a way that's like, oh, it's good to have well-rounded female characters, obviously. Like, people don't have to be likable, but like, she is just the worst person. And yeah, would not recommend. It's not even like a fun trash watch, because like, she's so frustrating as a character. So I will not be watching this, and I would recommend no one ever watched it ever in their lives. And that is my review. Pam, did you like it?
I have seen more than one episode, but I think that it definitely, it lacks a lot. And to me, she's almost kind
it
of
lacks
like
all substance.
She's like a defunct manic pixie dream girl, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's basically like, that's the best way I can think of to describe. So it's Sophia, right? And I wanted to like this for many reasons. One, because it was filmed in San Francisco. Two, because I really like Britt Robertson as an actress. And three, because I also like Jim Rash, and he's in here too. But it's just not like, it just like, I don't know. I don't feel satisfied like watching it at all. But I can see how it could be appealing for somebody. And I can just tell you from basically, I'm a little over like, I don't even know. I have it on in the background because I want to get to a point where it's like, why did you make this? Like, was this a story worth telling? You know what I mean? So I think I'm still like searching for that, but it's like, it's not really coming up with anything too impressive, yeah. Unfortunately. So I have low hopes for the rest of the show, but I don't know. It's just like, there's not enough character growth. Like, because anybody can
there's
really
no
be driven.
Growth.
You know what I mean? But yeah, but I'm like 6 episodes in or 7 episodes in or something. Cause it's like, they're 20 minute episodes. So it's really easy to just kind of like keep it on in the background if you're doing stuff. But she's kind of just like the same person, except for that she's found something that she doesn't want to quit, which is like flipping things on eBay. So,
And also what I don't like about this is it's kind of, it's sort of this self-styled like feminist sort of thing, but let me be very clear. This is not a feminist story. It is not feminist just because it happens to star a woman. And this is also particularly uncomfortable because like there are so many issues, A, with like girl boss as like a concept. And also the fact that the real Sophia, who this is about, like her company, Nasty Gal, like were under fire and like had this controversy for like firing pregnant women before they could like take maternity leave and stuff. So like there's a lot of things tied up in this, and I really do not like the glorification of like this kind of behavior, you know, under the label of like, oh, it's feminist and like it's just because she's not likable. Like that's not what this is about. And
the thing about her, though, is that I don't think that they set her out, like, they didn't write her to be unlikable, but that's what she is, you know what I mean? Like, I really think that they're banking on this idea that everyone's going to be like, oh, she's different,
she's so cool, edgy, and she's so cool,
yeah. And if you don't like me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best, which is like, I hate that quote so much, but that's what they're banking on, basically, but it just falls flat, because she's like, she's a terrible person. She kind of treats her friends terribly. And, like, I guess you could argue it's because she has, like, daddy issues. But a lot of people have daddy issues and they're fine human beings. So it's, like, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm glad that, like, you've seen... I mean, I'm not glad that you've suffered through more of this. But, like, I'm glad that you're not like, oh, well, I watched episode 2 and everything that happens is totally undone.
No. I will say that, like...
I know I'm making a judgment based on one episode, but, like, I'm pretty confident in this judgment.
No, honestly, like, it doesn't really get much... Like, the only thing that grows is her company, but she stays pretty stagnant throughout, honestly. And most of the characters stay very stagnant from what I've seen. So, yeah, I don't know. And I was, like, actually kind of really surprised that Charlize Theron was I don't know, how, like, how big of a hand she had in this, but I was surprised that this was the thing that she chose to, you know, devote time to, basically, because she's a co-producer.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, it was an odd choice. Yeah, I don't know. If you have seen this, though, and you have, like, a differing opinion, please let us know, because, you know, Marima and I are only two voices, and we always love to know what you guys think. But, yeah, mediocre is like the nice way to put it, honestly.
Yeah, agreed. And then obviously we've been watching Dear White People. I mean, we're going to talk about this in our Patreon segment, but I want to say on the show, I love this show and I binged the whole thing in one day. So
yeah,
like this is one of the best shows I have seen in a really long time and I would recommend it to everyone. It's so, so good. Do not, like, this is a show where you cannot judge it based on the first episode because it's told through different points of view. I don't think that's a spoiler to say. And the episodes are really short. They're only like 30 minutes, but it's hilariously funny, but also like really, really well done, I think.
Yeah.
And we'll get into more details, but I just wanted to like definitely give it a shout out on the main show too.
Yeah. It's very self, like the writing is very self-aware. And I just can't imagine like the care that they put into making sure that like they were telling the story the right way. So yeah, it's really good. I'm excited to talk with you about it with all the spoilers. Okay, we are going to transition into listener feedback. As always, we're going to kick things off with some comments from our lovely patrons. If you want to check out what we've been doing on Patreon, you can find us at patreon.com/hypepodcast. Even if you're not pledging, you can still get access to our free month of material that we put out when we first launched our Patreon. So if you're just interested in seeing what that's all about, those posts are still up and they're still public. For those of you that are graciously pledging, we just want to thank you one more time. We really appreciate your support and we hope that you've been enjoying what we've been putting out there. This week, in conjunction with our upcoming bonus discussion on Netflix's Dear White People, Marima, this is actually Marima's idea. She wanted to know what people were currently binge watching or what was the last series that they binged. So we got a few comments here from our patrons. The first one here is from Laura Morrow, who said, in addition to 13 Reasons Why, which was one of the first adaptations that I think actually enhances the book and really allows you to get to know all the characters, not just Clay and Hannah, it is not an easy show to binge watch, but I did really enjoy it. I've also been watching Saving Grace. It is a show about a cop who unexpectedly gains a last chance angel. And it is very funny, but also deals with some hard issues and also features a very cute but much younger Clay from 13 Reasons Why. And I'm almost done with season 3. I wreck both. Very interesting. And then we have one more response here from Abby, who says, I'm about 15 years behind, but I'm finally watching The West Wing.
Yes!
I'm almost done with season 3, and it's incredible. The dialogue is smart, fast, and witty, and I can actually see the Gilmore Girls connections I've heard about in that sense. I knew this comment was going to make
you excited.
Great
choice, Abby. Yes, that's my fave show. So yeah, I'm excited.
And, of course, we also have a bunch of tweets from you guys. If you want to tweet at us or give us a follow, you can find us at twitter.com/hypeablehype. Let's just go down the line and alternate here. So let's do Selena, Marima, and then I'll go after.
Okay, so Shelley says, guys, Eurovision is coming up. Will you guys be watching or following it? I mean, Obviously. It's Eurovision.
Yeah, and Australia is still in it for some reason. So, like, yeah.
I know. Apparently, I haven't heard any of the songs yet, but apparently the Danish one is really boring and bad. So I probably will have to find someone else to root for. The Italian one is the favorite to win, which would be fun because Italy hasn't won, like, in, like, a million years. So that should be so much fun. My mother is studies or is like a doctor and has all this stuff on like the EU and how Eurovision like allows us to poke fun at ourselves and each other and gives us a window into all of these countries that we otherwise would have no idea like existed, like Azerbaijan gets a song and whatever. So it's really great. Latvia and you just get all these ideas about what the other countries in the EU are, or the Europe and the extended world, like Israel and Australia,
yes.
What they do and what kind of crazy costumes they put on and stuff. So it's great. I love Eurovision.
But no Russia, right, this year?
No Russia this year.
Yeah.
Big scandal there. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there might be some backlash against Australia this year because last year, like, well, there are like two Australian entries that there have been like quite good. And it's like Australia did not get the memo that you're meant to go there with some like outrageous costume and a giant wind machine. Like, we have been training for this moment for our whole lives. So like when Australia gets there, we're like,
you went too good.
Yeah. The first year Australia went and like came in the top five and everyone was like, oh wait, no, like they can't actually win. So yeah. But I mean, it's hard.
Whatever. I think actually Denmark has an Australian person wrote the song, or it's an Australian Danish singer, so they're like banking on your votes.
Oh, but you just said it was really boring.
Well, it is.
I mean, no.
But the idea is that like that's why they get people from different countries to make songs. Like that guy from Norway who won, who was actually from somewhere in Eastern Europe. So they were like, they got all those votes and stuff.
I think there's lots of
politics involved here.
In Australia, there is no coverage of Eurovision until Eurovision like actually happens. So I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh yeah, well that Denmark song, that's the one to watch because of the Australian involved. We're very self-centered and we're very fickle. Okay, we have another tweet here. Oh, this is for me from David Raynard, who says, you might find this interesting to me. And it is, oh, it's a podcast, guys. It is an episode of Planet Money. Oh, this does sound interesting. It is the business genius behind Get Out. As we know, I'm obsessed with that movie because it is perfect. And I would definitely check this out. Thank you so much, David. I will report back.
And I have a tweet here from Jasmine Diaz who says, I'm all for this hashtag Harry hype. And then she says that she likes my One Direction playlist and also says, I'm co-signing the acoustic playlist as well. Hashtag can't wait.
Yeah, Pam, where hashtag is that?
Thanks, Pam. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like One Direction.
Thanks, Spam.
Yeah, thanks, Spam.
Thanks, Spam.
I like to thank Spam.
Thanks, Spam.
Oh, my gosh.
This episode is brought to you by Spam.
That's amazing. So here's the thing. One Direction.
Which is almost
really...
the four of us, our name. I'm so sorry, but that's like the four of our names combined. Spam.
Oh my God, it is. Perfect.
Why did we never think
because
of this?
Because we wanted to call the show PMS, remember?
Yeah. Oh. Spam relevant. Is clearly so much more accurate.
Yeah, though. I know, exactly.
Anyway.
Spam, spamming your everything from Twitter to your podcast feeds. Well,
anyway.
Stay tuned for this. I'm still trying to figure out how to do this because One Direction has not recorded a lot of their tracks acoustically. So, you know, it might have to be like a YouTube playlist or something. Stay tuned.
Or just put like the... just
all the slow
like,
songs in,
know,
one,
more chill
in one
out
playlist?
Songs. Yeah.
Oh, that's easy. Mm-hmm. That's easy. Okay.
Yeah,
stay tuned not too long from now.
Yes.
Fresby says, Selena, this to me, recently started watching Riverdale and will be continuing because it's my brainless show. It plays in the background and I just tune it out. I totally understand and agree with what you said on the show. I just take pleasure in eye rolling at the show. Ha ha. I am totally like, I think that is a totally valid reason for watching something. So good. Awesome. As long as you enjoy the eye rolling and aren't like actually hurting yourself eye rolling too hard, then you're good.
I can confirm, having had like almost 26 years of anecdotal experience, it's impossible to strain your eyes eye rolling. Okay, Laura Mara, this is a comment? Is this a comment? Or a tweet? Anyway, this is from Laura who says, a long tweet, sorry, who says, the reason I am hoping for 13 Reasons Why season 2 is because unlike the book, it actually shows the aftermath of her death. In the book, you only really get Clay's point of view, and I just want to see where these characters go. The show is very good. Oh, and also, I have a newfound respect for you ladies. Recording a podcast is really not easy, but you make it seem so easy.
Oh.
If only you heard our disasters.
I know. You know what, Laura? We've been doing this for so long that
yeah,
just kind of turn the things on. Just
it's
go.
True. Yeah, as you will have heard on our bonus audio from last week.
I know, exactly. Sometimes we mess up too. We just, through the magic of editing, it all sounds amazing, hopefully. Through the magic of Selena's editing.
Well, we do our best.
Okay, we're going to wrap things up for you guys with a few emails. The first one here comes from Shannon, who says, I'm a few months behind after taking a hype break to listen to 5 seasons worth of rewatchables, Buffy and Angel episodes. Wow.
That's a lot.
I know. Anyway, I was so excited to hear you guys talk about Lois and Clark with Terry Hatcher coming on Supergirl. That is definitely further incentive to move that up on my extensive list of shows to watch. I love Lois and Clark. It was a big part of my childhood, even though I was too young to truly appreciate it in earlier viewings. And I feel like too many people I know have never even heard of it. Back when you guys, I think it was this podcast, talked about ranking your top few favorite shows, I thought about it for quite a while, rearranging a bunch of my favorites before it dawned on me that the only show I didn't question its placement was Lois and Clark. It's old and cheesy, and some of the special effects are fairly ridiculous, and it had a crazy soap opera plot, but it's the best, and I appreciate you guys mentioning it. Also, shout out to Dean Cain, my first celebrity crush. Love the show, Shannon. I love that.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
And we have one more email. That's so cool. Who wants to take this?
I can do it. We have one more email. This one is from Amanda, who says, hello, ladies of Hype Podcast. I wanted to see if any of you have been watching Harlots. It's a show on Hulu that comes out every Wednesday. It's only 4 episodes deep with 4 more left in the season, but I am hooked. I have seen nothing about it on Hypeable's website. I think the Hype ladies would be interested because instead of showing these women suffering, they instead make it an empowering tale about survival with no sugarcoating. I'm absolutely obsessed with Jessica Brown Finlay's character, Charlotte Wells, but there are just so many interesting characters. Have you ladies gotten a chance to watch Harlots? Did you guys have any thoughts on the show? Thank you, Amanda James. Has anyone seen this?
No, I mean, this is one of the things that my Twitter feed is blowing up about because it's supposed to be so good. I've definitely been meaning to watch it. Now that I know that Jessica Brown Finlay is in it, I'm probably going to bump it up on my list a few spots because I love her. So that sounds good. I'm so glad to hear you're enjoying it, Amanda. It's just one of those shows, I think, that has slipped past Hypeable's radar, unfortunately, because from everything I've heard of it, it really deserves the attention.
Yeah, I haven't seen
it. So I'll try to check it out.
It's like basically impossible for me to watch Hulu shows, unfortunately, unless it's been like picked up somewhere else in Australia. So this one might have to be on Selena to check out. It sounds cool though. I want to watch a trailer or something to like get the vibe of the show.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this, but I know that like Hulu has really been upping the ante with their original productions. And so, we'll keep that in mind because I think we're so often focused on Netflix that, you know, some of these Hulu shows fall through the cracks. So thanks for letting us know. And with that, we have officially reached the end of our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. But before we let you go, as always, we do want to remind you about all of our contact information in case you want to get a hold of us and chat about anything we talked about this episode or, you know, kind of just say hi or maybe suggest a topic that you'd like to hear us dedicate a bit more airtime to in the future. For starters, if you have rather shorter comments, you can reach us on Twitter. We are at Hypeable Hype on there. We are also at Hypeable Hype on Instagram in case you want to follow along on any of the pop culture related adventures the hosts are having in between episodes. If you have rather lengthy comments, you can leave them in the show notes on hypeable.com. Alternatively, you can email us lengthier comments. Our email address is hype@hypeable.com. We also want to remind you that we have a Tumblr if you're interested in giving us a follow over there. Our Tumblr address is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And additionally, if you're interested in checking out what we've been up to on Patreon or signing up for that, we are patreon.com/hypepodcast. And I think that that's all of the different ways that you can get a hold of us. Hopefully I didn't forget anything. Every once in a while, we do like to remind you guys that it really helps us out a lot if you give us a 5-star rating and leave us a little review on iTunes. It just helps this show get more recognition. And it helps us as far as like, you know, getting potential special guests on in the future and things like that, which we're definitely interested in doing more for you guys. So if you have time and you wouldn't mind, we would love it if you could support the show by doing that. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you guys next time for episode 145. My name is Pamela.
I'm Selena.
And I'm Marima.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.